There we go. My tech team tells me to pause, which is good. So we don't have to keep all the propaganda when we actually start addressing questions. So that's the Bardo. Do you get it, Alyssa? That's the Bardo. That's my pause.
I got it.
And I also got a new pair of glasses. So this is cool. I'll be switching back and forth. I got these new glasses that allow me. I have a hard time because I'm spending so much time in front of a computer now. You may have noticed I'm always doing this or looking up. People think I'm a real snob. It's because I am. But, you know, I'm always looking at people down my nose because I have progressives and I can't see, right? So I'm doing all this stuff all the time and people just think I'm arrogant, which is true sometimes. But I got new lenses so I can now look, their model, I can look straight ahead and I can actually see without doing this, huh? Or like, you know, Bob Thurman, you're like, you do the chat thing, you're doing like, huh? What? Anyway, great questions came in, so let's get at them. That's what we do here. People send me questions, which is fun. I do my best to address them, but it's also participatory. If you haven't done this before, you can ask a live question, always best, raise your hand. Always better if you do that, because then I can have some dialogue. You can put a question in the chat column, I'll address it. And if you have a contribution, if you want to just share something, more than welcome to do that as well. So it's just a way to hang out. So I convey these anonymously. This one is reads as follows. I'm very worried about being in the Bardo after death. Concerned about going into a dark realm and being born into a harsh life like the one I came into. Many years of my life were filled with emotional suffering because of childhood trauma. Well, first of all, I'm very sorry for that. That's no day at the beach. And I'm not going to dismiss that in any way. But here's the thing about this. I'm very worried about being in the Bardo after death, concerned about going into a dark realm, being born into a harsh life like the one I came into. This is really a good question in the sense that it's somewhat revelatory, perhaps, of this assumption that we all seem to think, many of us do anyway, that somehow we're, the Bardo is pre-existing, like heaven or hell, and that it's just waiting for me. And I'm just going to plop into the Bardo and then whatever, I'm screwed. That's not the way the Bardos work. There's nothing there waiting for you. It's a little bit like saying, I'm afraid of dreaming tonight because I'm going to enter this pre-existing dreamscape. The Bardo is a state of mind. Nirvana is a state of mind. There's no Nirvana out there waiting for you. Samsara is a state of mind. It's all mind. So this is a good question. You're worried about being in the Bardo after death. One way to rephrase this is you're worried in this context is you're worried about being with your mind. And so this is actually something you can do something about. If you understand that, and this is why, by the way, the Bardo are connected to the dream states. You've heard me say this before. The Tibetan tradition talks about three types of dream. Nighttime dream, we know that one. This is actually a dream. Look around, this is a dream. We just haven't woken up to it yet. And then they call the dream at the end of time. That's death, that's the Bardos. Everything's a dream because dream is code language for manifestation of mind. It's all mind. There's no Bardo waiting for you. It's your mind that's waiting for you, free from the limitations and obscurations of your body. And honestly, that kind of fear, honestly, is good. This is what Lama Zopa Rinpoche talks. He has a whole book about this called Wholesome Fear. This is good fear because this is the fear of like, hey, wait a second. This is just karma. This is just pure causality physics. What is found now is found then, Kabir said, right? So if you want to know what's going to happen to you when you die, look at the mind that you inhabit now. It's like Padmasambhava once said, if you want to know your previous lives, look at your present condition. If you want to know your future lives, look at your current actions. And so this is actually, it's good news, bad news. It's bad news if you're not prepared, because then you're going to enter your mind free of any limitation. And that, depending on the contents of that mind, that may not be so propitious. That could be like, or advantageous, I should say. That could be like inhabiting a nightmare. And so a nightmare, you know, it's not a pre-existing landscape. It's a mindscape. But here's the really good news, to just put this on a really powerful, positive note, is that you can do something about this. Start to work with cultivating love and kindness and compassion and all these natural, wondrous qualities that you have within you. Because then when that is revealed, when that becomes your bardo, then you have something to look forward to. Anxiety is replaced with anticipation. You realize, I'm going to descend. And I talked a little bit about this with Delson yesterday, because when he was talking about his memory, I asked him, how did you come to remember your past lives? And he actually talked about the mechanisms of how he did it. It was great stuff. It was all classic. It was just exactly what the traditions say when you reach these certain proficiencies. So it was really pretty cool. But the idea here is, this can be a wholesome fear. It can be good fear. And here's, let me see if I can remember it. Here's a verse. I'm riffing on this because this is important. This is a verse from Milarepa, who attained enlightenment in one life because of his fear. This guy killed 37 people. That's not a lot of good karma waiting for you. That's not exactly a warm reception committee after you die. Not the best welcoming committee. So he realized, and he said, in horror of death, I took to the mountains, contemplating again and again on the uncertainty and the hour of death. I captured the fortress of the deathless, unending nature of mind. Now all fear of death is over and done with. So he used his fear in a good way to, like, whoa, I think I know what's going to happen. I better do something about it. And so he spent 12 years in intensive retreat, purified all his karma, got rid of all the stuff, died before he had to die, and then attained enlightenment in one lifetime, and then had everything to look forward to. So really great question. You're not going to go into any pre-existing landscape because there isn't one. It's your mind. So this is something you can do. You can work with this. Create a heaven waiting for you. Proof of heaven, right? So I'm not going to mention names, but if the person is listening who did ask this and wants to follow up, raise your hand and we can talk further. But that's what comes to mind. Okay, here's a sleep and dream question. I took galantamine. That's acetylcholinase esterase. Many of you know this. It's a naturally occurring substance that's been somewhat synthesized that you can take that increases lucidity in terms of clarity. I use it in all my dream yoga retreats these days. So anyway, I took galantamine for the first time 2 nights ago. I had trouble falling asleep. Okay, first thing is, the recommendation is you don't take it as you're going to sleep. You take it 6 hours after you go to sleep. So you're in bed. This is the best way to do it. You go to sleep, set your alarm for 6 hours later, or depending on your sleep pattern, 2 to 3 hours before you normally wake up. Set your alarm, wake up, take the 4 to 8 milligrams of galantamine, then don't take it when you're just going down to sleep. That's probably one reason why this happened to you. So don't do that. You can, but then you have these problems that you're talking about. I was not falling asleep as fast as usual, not uncommon. Liminal state was much more vivid than usual. I would expect that. That makes sense. I could manipulate the images in semi-pre-dreams. Yes, these are dream image amalgamations, thought image dream amalgamations. They're called dreamlets, with much more ease than usual. Cool. That night, though, I did not dream. Usually I can remember my dreams very well and have been journaling. You probably did dream, you just don't remember it. It's only people who have somewhat rare organic brain disorders that don't dream. Everybody dreams. We just don't remember it. The difference between access and phenomenal consciousness. The frustration and anxiety carried over into the blackness of dreamless sleep. Okay. I am wondering if I experienced lucid sleep. Doesn't sound like it, because you wouldn't be feeling frustration and anxiety. When you're in deep dreamless sleeps, there are clear markers for this. And actually, Delson's, he's being studied with this stuff as well. We talked about that. It's pretty cool. It's formless. So you can't be anxious in that state. There can be no anxiety. There can be no frustration. If there is, that's not dreamless sleep. Dreamless means formless. So doesn't sound like you were quite there. I'm wondering if I experienced lucid sleep. I don't think so. It doesn't sound like it. That's one way to recognize it. There's no affective component to it as we know it. And secondly, even deeper, is one way to really test this is if you're in that state and you feel, I'm experiencing this, that's not it, because that's still subtly dualistic. That's the way you can tell. And that's why it's hard to talk about, because it's not an experience. Experience, by definition, is based on consciousness, which is dualistic. That's what makes this stuff slippery. When you're there, you know, you, the bigger part of you. It's not an experience, it's a realization. It's a non-dualistic type of knowing. And so not only can you not have frustration and anxiety, but there's also the sense that there's no longer the sense that I'm experiencing that. That's not there, because if it is, that's still dualistic, so you're not there. I could feel the mild nervous energy that I think incubated unknowingly. Yes, I think that's true. You did probably incubate that unknowingly. And I was focusing my awareness on the awareness itself. That's good. But see, awareness focused on awareness itself, this is a multivalent practice. So because awareness is a multivalent term. So when we talk about awareness in the sense, it's like, what level of awareness are you talking about? Even if you're doing things like open awareness, which is the practice of awareness, that's still dualistic. If you associate awareness with Rigpa, which is what happens in deep dreamless sleep, then that's real awareness of real awareness. See? So this stuff gets, this is very nuanced, very kind of subtle stuff. Was this lucid sleep? I don't think so. Can the anxious feelings carry over into lucid sleep? No, because nothing fits through that chipper, right? That's why I have that image of the hourglass. Same thing applies to death. The hourglass, which doubles as a chipper, you know, one of those roadside thingies that you throw crap into and it gets all chewed up. Well, that's what happens to any form when you fall into deep dreamless sleep, which is why we don't recognize it, because we identify with the forms that arise in awareness, not with formless awareness itself. That's why we black out. But for yogis, they light up, hence luminosity yoga, that's what it's called, because they can identify formless awareness itself. Formless awareness falls into itself, Rangbap, recognizes itself. So can you take these feelings into lucid sleep? No, you can't. Even if all thoughts, images, and emotions are not there, or is the body completely numb to the nervous system in the state? Well, this is another good question. You're in the very subtle body here. So there's no, this is what makes it difficult to send signals from this in the lab to the scientist. It's really difficult to send a signal. So you've subsended physicality. And so you've subsended everything you're talking about here. I woke up thinking I only slept for 2 hours. Yeah, sleep state misperception, it's called, when in reality it was closer to 6. We talked about this with Dr. Ed yesterday. By the way, for those of you who are nightclub members, you might want to spend more time with what we're doing with Dr. Ed once a month now. He's talking about some really cool stuff. Really great questions are coming in. We posted it yesterday. And the questions, he's so great. The reason I mention this is we talk about this called sleep state misperception, where you think you're sleeping 1 or 2 hours, people come in, they're complaining, I'm not sleeping. You run a lab study and you show them, yes, you are. You just don't know it. But small sidebar for nightclub members, we're starting to talk some cool stuff with him on these Wednesdays. So that's it. That's my little riff on that. I love these questions. These are good. Okay, a couple more, then we can open it up. Regarding dream signs, yes, there's dozens of those. So this is a question about lucid dreaming and dream signs. So dream signs are what they sound like. Dream signs are signs, indications that occur in a dream that you can sensitize yourself to, so that when they occur, they clue you into the fact that you're dreaming. Super powerful. I use them all the time. But let's see where this question takes us. I've been brought into lucidity twice by dream elements that were too outrageous to accept, shocking me into lucidity. Spot on, amigo. I've done this hundreds of times. Dream signs totally work. As I begin to dream journal and look for signs, should I consider dream signs to be, one, any element that recurs in my dreams? Absolutely, positively. This is the way you can use recurrent dreams for lucidity. So you have a recurrent dream. I've done this, I can't tell you how many times. And there's a recurrent pattern. I write it down. I highlight the common features. And then I sensitize myself to those. I used to have all these dreams of my childhood home in Michigan and all kinds of waves crashing into the house, that kind of thing. And so I just started to associate those signs through recurrent dreams with, in fact, lucidity triggers. And so the recurrent dreams became an absolute treasure trove of dream sign material. So absolutely, any element that recurs in my dreams, recurrent dreams, write them down, circle them, study them, become familiar with them, and then say to yourself, the next time I experience this, whatever it is in my dream, I will recognize that that's a dream sign, and then I become lucid. Okay, should I consider dream signs to be that? Number one, yes. Number two, outrageous elements that recur in my dreams. Absolutely. Anything out of the ordinary that can't happen in normal life. I mean, that's what triggers a ton of lucidity. I have to share the story with you. Every time I get these kind of questions, I have to chuckle because my dear friend Joe Parent, he shares this story liberally, so I'm not violating anything. Just to show you how sometimes intractable this can get, right? So Joe shares this story all the time. It's fantastic. So he was in a dream, and his teacher, I think it was recording in progress. See, that's a dream sign right there. It's a dream sign. Anything that's unusual, that's a little weird, you conduct a state check. I've done this so many times. That's weird. Jump up, jump. Why do I do that? Well, because if I come down, I'm probably still here, still awake, so to speak, relatively. Next time I'm going to do this, I'm working on this. I'm going to jump up and I'm going to keep going. I can't wait to do that. Or even better, I'm going to go up and then I'm going to come down and like disappear. I could do that one, right? So anyway, Joe shares this story. Sorry, I didn't sleep enough last night. Just kidding. So Joe shares this story where talk about dream signs. So he's having a dream. His teacher, Trungpa Rinpoche, appears in his dream and says to him point blank, Joe, you're dreaming. Like, hello, could you ask for a more blatant dream sign? And sweet Joe comically shares, I just didn't get it, right? Here's this teacher in a dream saying, Joe, you're dreaming. And it wasn't enough for him to become lucid in the dream, but it sure does make fodder for great comedy and humor around lucidity. I love that he shares that story. Okay, outrageous elements that occur. Yes, these are called strong dream signs. There's so many different names for these. Strong dream signs are like, you know, I'm sitting here and an elephant walks into my study. Whoa, that's a pretty strong dream sign, right? A weaker dream sign, a bird hits the window. It's still unusual, but not as strong as the elephant coming in. I can still sensitize myself to that. So what you want to do here is just like what we did. It's kind of serendipitous event a few seconds ago. Anytime anything just a little bit unusual or weird happens, which happens all the time, you sensitize yourself to those discontinuities, whatever, and you conduct a state check. For me, like I just did, I usually just jump up. Why do you do that? Well, one of the characteristics of our dreams is weird crap happens all the time. That's what defines a dream. If you just take it at face value, welcome to the world of non-lucidity. If you start questioning appearance, questioning the authority of appearance, then all of a sudden, like, whoa, wait a second, I've got tons of opportunities to work with lucidity. And if you start to train yourself in this, this is a big deal for lucidity. Okay, can I focus my intent to be on the lookout for any outrageous element, even if non-recurring? Yes, exactly what I just said. Yep, there you go, my friend. That will really help. One more, at least on this list. I'll try to summarize this one. It's a little bit longer. I've had some success with lucid dreaming previously. I'm currently in the second month of rededicating myself to practice. Very cool. Hoping to progress practicing dream yoga. Even more cool. In this time, I've been keeping a dream journal and have gone from a few fragmentary recollections to 3 to 6 complex and interesting dreams each night. Whoa, that's awesome. Good for you. Perfect. In some of these, I recognize dream signs, another thing, like the previous question, like a lessening of gravity or other anomalous phenomena and realize I'm dreaming. Perfect. But I have no dream superpowers. Okay, we can work on that. In my previous experiences with lucid dreaming, I've gone directly from the realization that I'm in a dream to, for example, the ability to fly, my favorite. Yeah, that's kind of cool. I do that too. I like to fly. However, my current experience is that I'll realize that I'm dreaming, but be unable to do anything with that realization and remain non-lucidly in the reified dream reality. Well, that's that's an oxymoron. So if you realize that you're dreaming, you're not going to remain non-lucidly. So I think you're using the term lucidity in two different senses here, right? The sense I'm deriving here is you still think that what you're lucid to the dream, if I'm reading this properly, but you're still reifying the contents of the dream. That's the way I read this. That's where dream yoga comes in. Because dream yoga, stage 2 through 9, is all about this. It's all about working with de-reification, with emptiness. The whole dream yoga path is about just this. And so then you give some examples. I don't need to read those. But this is exactly the whole point. You know, it basically, dreams are truth tellers, right? So you're in the dream, you're lucid, but you're non-lucid in the sense, second sense that you're talking about it, because you can't seem to have superpowers to do anything in the dream. Why is that? Because your habits are being revealed. Your karma is being revealed. That's why this is a slightly more advanced practice. Some people don't want to be so revealed. And so basically what it's exposing is your habits for reification, your habits for taking these dreams appearances to be real. And so that's actually, if you relate to it properly, that can be seen as a metric of success. It's like, whoa, it's pointing out to you where you're stuck. It's like, whoa, I am still really reifying my reality. And this is why dream yoga is a path. You're not going to just wake up one day and have these superpowers and accomplish everything you want in a dream. It just doesn't seem to work that way. You have to slowly chip away at the process of de-reification, and the processes, these powers then evolve from that. Then you say something here, you give these two examples, which I don't really need to share. As I write these examples, I can provide psychological explanations for each. That's fine. That's great. But that's not dream yoga. Not dissing that at all, but that's not dream yoga. That's dream interpretation. Fine, great, do it, but it's not dream yoga. Dream yoga is not interested in interpreting content, just like meditation. Meditation is not interested in mental content. It's interested in changing your relationship to that mental content. Same with the dream, dream yoga. Dream yoga is not interested in dream interpretation, as valid as that is in its own classification. It transcends that. Okay, as I write these examples, I can provide psychological explanations for each, basically having the message to be here now. That's a good message if you got it. Yes, not a bad message at any time. However, I wonder if you have any suggestions for moving beyond what seems like a plateau. Yes, it's called the path. Moving beyond this just takes time, patience. What Trungpa Rinpoche talked about is manual labor, because we are really reified beings. I mean, if you see me separate from you, you're reified, you're sleeping. If you see the world as separate from you, that's another bad habit. These bad habits of reification will not be exhausted until you attain Buddhahood. So what you're talking about here is just basically the process of the path and the dream. What is the moniker of dream yoga? The measure of the path. Your dreams will show you where you are. Because the parental function, the kind of mediating, editing function of the prefrontal cortex, no longer censoring. And so your stuff, and this is why some people are like, oh my God, I didn't realize, oh geez, my dreams are still showing me this. Yeah, they will, right? So this is really, if you relate to this in a healthy way, this is really good stuff, because it will show you where you're stuck. In dream yoga, your failures are successes, because they show you where you're stuck, see? So the way to get past this is you just keep going. Study everything in this tradition, emptiness, emptiness. Study more about reality, emptiness. Work with it, engage meditation more deeply. And honestly, I'm being somewhat glib here, but any suggestions for moving beyond this? Yeah, it's called the spiritual path. You just keep going. And then you'll start to see the signs of progress in your dreams. You'll start to notice these. It's not always linear. It can be nonlinear. So don't expect to see an absolute direct correlation. But you will slowly, as you look back, you will start to see your abilities to wake up more readily, take control, develop these so-called superpowers. And then attain awakening in the ultimate sense. So let me just see. I think there was one more here. Bear with me for just a second. Yeah, so here's another one, and then I'll open it up as I scroll through some of this other stuff. I just joined and would like to begin your meditation program as a beginner. So I guess that means you joined iClub, which is great, wonderful. I would like to begin your program, meditation program as a beginner. We're all beginners. It's just a matter of degree. I have some experience with meditation, very cool. I can sit still. That's a great start. Well, we'd like to start at the beginning of my program. Okay, I did your free beginning session and would like to go on from there, or would you suggest I go through and pick the topics I find most interesting? Thanks for any help. I'm mostly asking, how do I access the archives? Oh, well, if you're a member of nightclub, you just go into the Monday meditation session. We've got, at this point, I don't know how many, 60 of these maybe. I don't really know, a ton. And so if you're going to go through that particular venue medium, then I would recommend you start it at the beginning, because I somewhat systematically presented articulate levels of unfolding of the path. And then at a certain point, you may want to get a meditation instructor, someone you can work with. Unfortunately, I don't have the time to do that, but I do believe that my dear friends, Jeffrey, who's very gifted, who also helps out on Mondays, and Joel, they might have the capacity. So you can reach out to them through me. And if you want to work with an MI meditation instructor, we can help that as well. But I applaud you. Meditation is, like Rinpoche says, is the greatest gift you can give yourself in this life for a number of reasons. One is you're always working with your mind, whether you know it or not. Everything is about working with mind, heart, everything. And so when you engage in meditation, you're just working with the mind directly. So I'm not sure what other tracks you may want me to run with this one, but basically, logistically, go back to the beginning of the meditation Monday night sessions that we started well over a year ago. Start at the beginning where I was running most of those at that point. And I'm pretty sure I went somewhat rigorously, systematically through the basic stages of fundamental mindfulness or shamatha. That's the infrastructure, right? And then from there, with Joe's help and Jeffrey's help and Janet's help, and this, I'm having this European coming in on May 30th. She's going to start doing some stuff for the summer with us. Then we start talking about all these other different types of meditations as well. So I hope that's helpful. And let me see if there's anything else here. I think I got these from last time. Okay, so if there are any live questions, or my favorite questions are dead questions. If anybody can send a dead question through the internet, that'd be great. But anyway, in the meantime, who do we have here? Judith. Hi, Judith. How are you?
Hi, Andrew. I'm good. Thank you. I hope I can put this question in the right way.
Okay.
In meditation, I don't think I've ever been able to really slip into that place. Luminous emptiness. I've been doing it for a very long time. But what I've done in the last year is I've had two heroic doses of psilocybin.
Oh, wow.
And okay. It's, in fact, I took a lot. And it's been really, really instructive. And I'm wondering if it feels like it could be like luminous dreaming.
Okay.
Because you lose your sense of yourself,
yeah.
But it feels at the same time more intimate than I could ever imagine.
What do you mean by that?
Oh, it's really hard to explain, and I'm sure there are other people that could explain it. But you've lost your ego, but you know what you're doing. You know.
That's not mutually exclusive. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And so, you know, you have these very experiences that are very, you know, they're very patterned, they're very dramatic. And I'm wondering, I'm taking one more and that's probably it, but I want to try and use what I've learned in my meditation to get somewhere, or to feel that, I'm making some kind of progress.
Okay. There's a lot there, Judith. So you started something, you said something at the beginning that's very interesting about wanting to slip into luminosity and emptiness. What does that mean to you?
Well, I'd like to, you know, you've talked about that before, Andrew, about slipping through, like, you know, and space and being able to be in, to be, and I think a lot of it has to do with fear, what you were talking about before. You know, there's this fear or there's this drawback that I've experienced sometimes. And then you can't do that with a heroic dose. You're there, you're gone, you're doing it. Whereas with meditation, you can pull back. And so you're not what I'm trying to say?
Not really, but let me tell you what I see as a potential thing you may want to consider.
Okay.
Is that, It is helpful. There's a number of ways to address what I'm gleaning from what you're asking. One is that if your intention is to actualize luminosity and emptiness, then it really would be helpful to understand what that means, because otherwise it's somewhat haphazard and directionless. And so therefore, understanding what that experience altogether is like let me give you an example, Judith. When I did my long retreat, we were introduced to a number, like dozens and dozens of practices. And we had lamas and Rinpoches and trainers come in, and we had weeks of intensive training before we started these practices, which was fantastic. And I took it upon myself every single time with every single practice to press the teachers, because I knew I'm going to be spending months doing this thing. I wanted to know exactly what I was doing, why, and what it meant to accomplish the practice. Right view. So right view is key here. So let's say in this case, I want to actualize luminosity and emptiness. What does that mean? Like, what does it mean? Because if one doesn't really understand, okay, like this is kind of what I'm trying to actualize, we're never going to get there. It's going to be somewhat haphazard, scattershot, and lucky, you know, like you might just get a little bit of luck. Another thing here, let me just say something a little bit about the whole psilocybin thing and the psychedelic thing. If you listen to the Chris Bache interviews, you know, almost 5 hours with him now. And if you haven't read his book, I might recommend it. These LSD in the mind of the universe, these agents have a place, but one has to be very cautious with this place, in my estimation, because they're kind of pointing out transmissions, or in this case, pointing in transmissions. They're neurological correlates to phenomenological states. They will help you using this kind of chemical mysticism. I'm not dissing it. I'm just trying to put it in its place. That they have a place. And again, full disclaimer, so it doesn't ruin my political career. I'm not endorsing this stuff as illegal. I'm not endorsing everybody should run out and start taking these agents. I am not saying that. What I am saying is they have a place. They can be used to point out particular states, but then, and even Chris says this, what do you do with those states? Experiences by design, by definition, always have a beginning and an end, and therefore they can become somewhat problematic. The blessing is they point out certain states, beautiful. But then what do you do with that? Where's the path quality there? So you can use those states, but I would just be a little bit cautious not to rely too much on that crutch. Because eventually that crutch is going to buckle underneath you. And then what are you going to do, right? So, you know, explore it, work with it in that capacity, but in an integral way, realize the strengths and limitations of that kind of approach. To me, it has a place, but it's a slippery place. Yeah. The other thing that I would say to you, and this denotes, is very interesting. On one level, and I talked a little bit about this with Delson yesterday when he was talking about all these amazing powers, which are great. I mean, I was really inspired by what this guy was saying. So then we got into this riff. I introduced the issue that, you know, Delson, you're sharing these amazing things. On one level, I'm inspired. On one level, listeners can be intimidated because you're talking about, they're literally called attainments. And so the reason I mentioned this to you is, you know, there's two ways. This is a slight, okay, different track of answer. There's two ways to look at this whole thing. One is, in fact, that you're trying the path of effort. You're trying to attain certain qualities. In this case, in his case, like the jhanas and these sort of things. And on one level, you're trying to attain luminosity, emptiness. You're trying to attain these particular dimensions of mind. Completely viable, absolutely, totally cool, but not absolute. There's still relative approaches. So the other approach that's more fruitional is not the path of attainment or acquisition, the path of subtraction or discovery. And I think this is the more important path. That luminosity and emptiness is the quality of who you are. That fundamentally, and this is why it's really helpful to centrifuge these things out, because if you're actually trying to achieve these types of states, the trying itself will prevent you from actualizing them, right? And then, okay, then you say, well, then what do you do? Well, that's where a real sense of understanding and right path and right meditations is critically important, because on one level, it's like the Nike approach. I mean, a lot of teachers came in way back 30, 40 years ago and they, you know, they had to just do it. And some new age people, I won't name names, still do it. They just run around saying, just do it, just do it. Yes, in theory, beautiful, great. But what does that really mean? How do you do something that is so so incredibly subtle? So I'll pause for a second and get some more guidance from you. Where you want to take this? But when you're talking about luminosity and emptiness, this is something you can't do. These are absolute level. If you're talking about specifically that, that is something that cannot be actualized through effort. There's no path to this. In fact, trying to get to it keeps you from it, right? So when you start talking about luminosity and emptiness, non-duality, that's a slightly different approach to meditation. Well, a more graduate school, it's the fruitional approach, but you really just have to be, I think, very clear about what those states really are, what it means to actualize them, the two different types of path. Because at these deepest levels, as Trungpa Rinpoche said, striving is the only obstacle. So I'll pause for a second, just make sure I'm getting your sweet spot on this.
Well, thanks, Andrew. In fact, when I was saying that, I realized that as I was saying it, I realized that this is something, so I think probably the biggest aspect for me that's been helpful is, firstly, overcoming my fear of it, because I think overcoming fear for me is an important thing.
What do you fear about it? Can you articulate?
Oh, fear about taking psilocybin?
So now you're back to psilocybin. Okay.
Yeah.
So that's okay.
Yeah. I was terrified the first time, which I think in itself was helpful to realize that I could do it, that I could actually let go to that extent. And do it. I was glad. And I think that what I do find myself doing is remembering it. And for some reason, it helps. It helps because, and I may be wrong, that I feel there's a similarity between that state that I was in.
Yes. Yeah. For sure. Yeah. So if you're using it in that capacity as a kind of, again, pointing out transmission, or in this case, pointing in, and then you can kind of use that as an aspiration to remember that kind of state, that's okay. But even though I've opened my mind to these sorts of things, I'm still a little bit more on the conservative approach with these. And I might just recommend don't put too much into that. You know, fundamentally, this is an organic process. And you've already had these kind of pointing out transmissions. And now for me, like, why do you want to go back in that particular way? That's just me. I'm not being judgmental. I'm just saying, why do you want to do that? Why not work to understand, refine your understanding of what you're really after? These agents are basically bringing about a particular state of mind using chemical means that you can attain completely organically. And so why not be green? Why go to the natural produce section in your grocery store? Don't go to the artificial food and coloring department.
That's a very good suggestion, Andrew. I suppose there's an element of impatience.
Yeah, eat your fruits and vegetables. Don't go to the candy counter.
Yeah.
Okay.
I did listen to Chris. That interview, it was amazing.
Yeah. The second one I think should be up. Or no, actually, it's not up yet. But the second.
Oh, really?
One, yeah, okay. We recorded it last week. We just haven't released it yet. So,
thanks, Andrew. Thanks.
To see you. Okay, let me see if there's something in the chat column in the meantime. Well, here's one from psilocybin is organic. Yes, I know what you're saying, but still, I'll just let it go. Myra, are you familiar with the surroundings of Menla? Yes, I am. It's gorgeous. Is it possible to stay outside the premises? Now, that's a really good question, Myra. Ask Michael. Write to Menla. I don't know. First of all, I'm not sure they would allow it. They might. I have no idea. I'm cool with it. I'm okay with that. I'm not sure they are. So you'd have to ask them. And they're really great about that. So just ping the front desk at Menla and just say, hey, what's there? Is it possible? I'm not even sure it's possible. But it's they do have stuff around there, I know. I can't speak with authority. Oh, you can't stay outside? You know that, Barry? Okay, talk to Barry. Barry knows everything. Yes, you can stay outside, but I don't know whether you can stay outside and still attend the program. I just don't know that. I'm speaking in real time, and Barry, my Siddha, is popping up all the answers here. Anyway, I'm sorry. George, fire away, bud.
Hey, Andrew, how are you doing?
I'm good, man. How are you?
Yeah, thanks. Fine. Actually, I was pondering about my daytime informal practice, revisiting an old idea. I wanted just to check in with you about that, because I've been rereading your book, Dream Yoga, and also Tenzin's book. Now, I've been reading a couple times, both of your books, and especially the chapters on experience and how experience arises, the dynamics, mechanics of experience arising, both in daytime and nighttime, were especially super interesting to read that again and to get deep into that. So basically what I mean by that, the flux of the movement of unnoticed emotional energies, mental pictures and so on, which happen during daytime but also during nighttime, especially clear during nighttime, during dream, if you're lucid to those, but those happen also during the daytime. And if we don't notice these energetic flows, these changes, these mental activities, it's very easy to fusion with those and be not lucid, right, and lose oneself in the experience self. And so I was wondering if that is so, it could be a form of all day awareness. To be lucid to that, to those energetic changes during the day, in order to also carry that into the night, is like a form of all day awareness, but on those, say, very subtle undertow energies, which basically normally would distort your experience during the daytime. Wanted to float that past you. I mean, you touched that to a great extent also in your books, but is that something that you're doing? Is it something that you would recommend?
Oh, absolutely. Yes, if there's one fundamental curative agent to any pathology, psycho, spiritual, whatever, it's awareness. I mean, it's a one-size-fits-all thing, awareness. Awareness cures everything. And so in that regard, for sure, whatever you can do to bring unconscious processes, subliminal consciousness, subconscious processes, into the light of awareness, that's colossal. In fact, Jung knew this, the psychologists know this, that in many ways is one way to talk about the enlightened journey, where you're unburdening yourself from all these energetics, again, depending on which language you use, that always run, you know, they run below the radar and they run the entirety of our lives. And so when we open up, become more porous, permeable to ourselves, these things gradually percolate into awareness. We become more aware of them. And then in so doing, we can establish a more sophisticated relationship to them, relate to them instead of from them. From them is no relationship at all. That's samsara. and then allow them to fundamentally purify and self-liberate. And so these are, this is one way to talk about the whole journey on one, kind of on one way is that all these undigested, unmetabolized, all the stuff that, that actually creates certain dimensions of the unconscious mind, that stuff has to come up. And it does come up. And so making it, allowing it to come up more and more allows you to fundamentally be free of it. And then therefore, exactly like you said, that also has applications to how you relate to those same contents when they arise when you're dreaming, right? So I'll pause for a second and see if that's kind of what you're asking, but that's what comes to mind.
Yeah. Basically, yeah. I mean, it's so subtle though, right? I mean, like it happens all the time and it goes by unnoticed. And so basically the reason why I'm asking this, because I had this thought or the idea to make that my main daytime informal practice, basically, right?
When you say that, let me interrupt you right there. When you say that, what do you mean that? When you say
yeah, exactly. I mean, any time I notice or train myself to be lucid to that emotional undertow, basically like a flux of energy. Basically, let me give you an example.
Okay.
For example, it's always best, right? So during daytime, today I was working, right? So working on some project in the company I work with. So there was a certain subject I had to work on and so on. And I didn't notice for a long time that I had an aversion to a certain, let's say, part of the work, right? And at a certain point, I noticed that. And I became lucid to that. So so basically, what I'm trying to say is basically, I mean, that's happening all the time on a very, very, very high frequency and very, most of the time not running by unnoticed. And so basically, would this not be actually how would you call that? The go-to technique. I mean, if one could do it, I mean, I can't do it. But the go-to technique basically to go to the core of being non-lucid, basically, that's a mechanics of becoming non-lucid, if that's true, if I understood that well. I mean, that if you break the dynamics in the moment where you fusion, where you enter the aversion or the attraction to an impulse, at that point you lose your lucidity, right? I mean, or you have the chance to become lucid.
Beautiful.
But it seems so subtle and hard to do, but it's actually at the core of the question, isn't it?
Beautiful. High five, bro. That's well said. And that's spot on. I agree with you 1,000%. Yeah, it's only subtle because we're so loud. It's subtle because the egoic mind is just so loud. But subtle does not mean ineffectual. Subtle dictates everything. These rudders. There's a particular name. It's escaping me. I actually write about it, but I'm forgetting it. Trim tabs. A trim tab. You know what a trim tab is? You know, either in a plane or a big liner. It's like the rudder within the rudder. It's just the tiniest little bloody thing that can direct this monstrous 1,000-foot-long ocean liner. That's this. So subtle does not mean ineffectual. Subtle runs gross. Backstage runs on stage. And so what you're doing here is absolutely spot on. And until we do that, we are fundamentally automatons. We're running on automatic ignorance based on, I talked about this with Delson a lot yesterday, largely based on speed of mind, powers of habit, where we literally, we confuse, we fuse all this crap together, largely out of fear. And it's only when we slow down and shut up, right? Shamatha, Vipassana, start to meditate, that we start to see all the stuff that is fundamentally running our lives. And so what you're talking about here is that I agree with you 1,000%, it's spot on. And then you will notice, just to reinstate, when proficiency in that develops, not only does it bring about lucidity in life, this brings about lucid living. Then the natural consequence of that is what? Lucid dreaming. So again, in short, 100% spot on, that's it. And so whatever you can do to facilitate that, you know, just continue to do it. And you will find it's both inspiring, I wouldn't say disconcerting, but revelatory, how subtle and insidious these dimensions can be, because it's layers, like onion layer, layer upon layer upon layer. And you start, it's like a sedimentation process that's been taking place for, depending on how you believe in these things, for billions of years, that is all part of the opening and releasing process that constitutes a journey. And that's what it is letting all the stuff come to the surface, accessing it, releasing it, opening it. And then eventually you start to notice profound changes in your life. You're already noticing that. you're no longer so non-lucid to the contents of your unconscious mind. You're actually starting to gain more control over your life. You're starting to gain a more refined relationship to this display. And whoa, that's no small thing. That's huge. So good for you. Awesome.
Thanks, Andrew.
Yeah, good stuff, Joe. Appreciate it. Hey, Myra. How's my favorite immigration lawyer?
The only one. Easy to be the favorite. I'm reading The Trackless Path, a commentary on the Great Completion, a commentary that the translation from Ken McLeod of Jigme Limpa.
Oh, yeah.
And it seems to me that a lot of the questions today is a very simple poem that he translated with the commentaries. And it's, I find it beautiful. It's almost like each one of the verses can be a contemplation, but it goes a lot into how we get trapped with all the effort that we do. Yeah. It's not like is it sudden or is it the path? And it's kind of both in a way. But I just recommend it to people that may feel that pull from, is it sudden, not sudden? Should I work hard? Or should I practice? Should I not practice? But it's a beautiful translation on the Great Completion of this poem from this sage. And it gets a lot into the traps that we get into with the effort too. And then I have to laugh.
Yeah, how so?
I have to laugh because one of the big traps is that our intellect and our arrogance of understanding six of this and seven of that and maybe all the consciousness and what is first, what wave it, and we get lost in the explanation instead of sitting back, and the clarity itself doesn't have a color, but it's the manifestation of reality. The manifestations that happen. But I just recommend that. I just want it as an offering if it calls to somebody else, because it's been like a very sweet, subtle poem. And I was wondering if you had read it, because
I have not read that. I mean, I'm a fan of Ken McLeod. He does cool stuff. And Jigme Lingbe, are you kidding? These are giants. Maybe you can type into the chat column the actual title.
I will do that. Yeah, it's a trackless path, yes.
Trackless path is-
I will do that.
Yeah, there's so much. We're really living in a rich, one aspect of the information age is really tremendous resources with people like Ken and others bringing up these massive treasure checks for popular, not popular, but public consumption. And so great. And you'll find, you know, resonances, obviously, that certainly at a certain point, you'll start to realize at the deeper levels that a lot of these topics start to bootstrap each other. And that's why when you read that, you go, right. Oh, that's what Jigme Lingpe says. And that's really cool. You know, at a certain point, you start to see how it kind of starts to sing in a chorus of sanity. So thank you for sharing that.
I will do that. Yeah, thank you.
Great to see you, dear. Okay, anything else before? Let's see, let me look through here. I think the poem is a long commentary, right? There's a question here, make sure you read the poem. It's probably a poem that runs for some pages with a couple hundred pages of commentary, I guess. Okay.
Shirley put her hand up. She messaged me in the chat. She had an unrelated question.
Oh, that's okay. You can still ask. Unrelated questions are welcome. Fire away. Hi, Shirley.
Hi, Andrew. Thank you. Thank you, Elizabeth.
Oh, who's the cat?
This is the unrelated question. I'm here in Long Beach, California, just till the 31st, and I found this little stray in my mom's garden, obviously abandoned, no chip, no owner. He's about two. He's going to the vet again today, and he's going to get all zhuzhed up with a flea bath and everything. And sorry, guys, but he's getting the snip next week. Yes, sorry.
Good thing.
Wondering. Anybody in Southern California, I can deliver him to you. He's probably the reincarnation of Padmasambhava. He'll help. If you dream of cats tonight, here's your dream sign right here. He'll help with your dream yoga. He is a love bug.
Oh, that's really awesome. That's beautiful. So, yeah, I don't live in the hood, so... it doesn't apply, but I mean, what a sweet little gesture, right?
Yeah. I don't either. Otherwise, I would take him home, but the UK has a pretty horrible quarantine policy.
What a sweetie. Yeah, Bonnie Molly's. Yeah, animals are better than people, in my opinion.
Yeah, so if anybody, and you decide, or you dream of him tonight, dream sign, get in touch with me on Nightclub, Shirley Cook Brooks, or Alyssa, or anybody, and I will bring him to anybody in Southern California. I'll pay all his health bills.
Oh, that's a real bonus of activity. Thank you, Shirley. That's totally appropriate and complete.
Thank you.
Actually, it is related. But thank you for offering that. That's just adorable. Thank you. Bye, kitty. And you never know. It really could be Padmasambhava. You could have a little bodhisattva in your house.
Exactly. I wish I could, but anyway. Thank you.
I know. I understand. Yeah, it's painful sometimes, right? I mean, the whole animal thing. Don't get me started on that. What's happening? It's just like, yeah. So anyway, good for you. Good karma for you. Good karma for the pets. Just beautiful. And maybe somebody will actually be able to help. So anything else before we, let's see, anything else here? Anything else before we, that's really cute. Padmasambhava, Pawdma. That's very nice. I like that. Judith, reflections on Silver Lake. There we go. See, I took my glasses off. You see what I have to do when I go to my other glasses? Okay, anything else before we close out for today?
Oh, wait, one second. Being flagged down.
Oh, yeah, Candy. Yeah, let's get Candy and then maybe we can close after that. Far away, Candy.
Hi.
Hi.
I wasn't expecting to do this, but. So about a month ago, I had a dream that I met a really scary creature. And something happened where I was able to go, wow, I can face this down. And so I did. I got really present in the moment. I've never had a lucid dream, so this was like the closest thing. I don't know if it's considered one, but this creature kind of dissolved and became ineffectual.
Oh, cool.
And So I guess I wanted to share that find out if I'm anywhere near in the territory. I have a lot of content dreams and remember them. But and then ask about galantamine, because I haven't had another one of those. And when I heard you talk about galantamine, I'm thinking, how much would I take?
Yeah,
like
right.
That.
So when you say face it down, so it sounds like there was some level of decision and lucidity in your capacity to even do that, right? So in other words, there was some unseemly, frightening entity that appeared in your dream, and there was some decision-making process that said, instead of running from this, I'm going to face it down, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, so that's a degree of lucidity. So this is the other thing that's important, is lucidity is, it's not a one-size-fits-all phenomena. Lucidity is code word for awareness. And so you can have a brief moment of lucidity. You can have really extended so-called hyperlucid dreams. But if you're actually able in the dream to make the decision, I'm not going to run from this, I'm going to face it, there's a moment of lucidity there. And so perhaps, maybe it didn't stay into a full-blown lucid dream, but that, give yourself some credit for actually doing that. And secondly, what's also interesting is just the fact that you even elected to do that, because the usual, that's why I think there was more lucidity going on than you think. Because the usual default with that is what? To just run from it. And then what happens? It just keeps chasing you, right? Because briefly, psychologically, the so-called creature, monster, whatever, I mean, what is it? It's not, it's just a rejected aspect of your being. There's part of you that hasn't been healed, whole. It's a residue taking a particular imagistic form, coming back for integration and wholeness. And so if you keep running from it, which is what most people do in those cases, guess what? It keeps chasing you, right? So if you face it, turn around, and then incorporate it, dissipate it, or whatever, then you may notice that that particular manifestation will be processed, metabolized, and so to speak, excreted. And you won't have that. You'll feel a little bit lighter and freer. So good for you on that. There's probably more going on there than you think. And really, for onironauts, psychonauts, those who explore their mind, this is the kind of warrior relationship we need to have that become open-minded, big-minded, and courageous enough through the strength of your own kind of meditative power and goodness, actually, to face whatever comes up. And then at that point, then, you know, these demons then become your friends. These are really profound opportunities for integration and healing. And so for like really deep divers, tantric practitioners and what, like, this is the kind of stuff they crave for. This provides really powerful opportunities for growth and transformation. So that's a nice thing just to keep in mind for right view, that this is different from some pacification traditions. This meaning with the approach I like to riff on, where you want to develop, or I think perhaps conducive to develop, a more fearless relationship to the contents of your experience, no matter how it arises, in a dream or otherwise, and incorporate it, love it, embrace it. And then that's how you dissipate the otherwise demonic energy. It's just a refused part of your experience thrown into the refuse heap of your unconscious mind that's coming to you calling back for integration, right? So in terms of that, in terms of galantamine, I'm pretty sure, Candy, if you're a nightclub person, there is at least one entire session I gave to galantamine, but I'll say a little bit about it now.
Thanks.
You can order it. I don't need to go into all the kind of science behind it unless you want me to. But the best way to do it, the best way I recommend is, usually comes in 4-milligram capsules or tabs. I recommend you start with 4 milligrams. Like I mentioned earlier, first question or second question of the session today. Take it, wake up 6 hours after you go to sleep, take it then, stay up for about 20 minutes to a half an hour. That conjoins it with the wake and back to bed method. And then simply just go back to sleep. And then just see what happens. For some people, nothing. But a lot of people, me included, your dreams just become more clear. It doesn't make them lucid. It just makes them more clear, lucid in that capacity. Your dreams just get more heightened. And so that gives you a greater capacity for many people to actually recognize the dream as a dream. And so with that said, if there's anything else you want to ask about it, it's pretty straightforward in that regard. All the details and whatnot are beyond the scope of what I can riff on now. But if you are a nightclub member, I'm pretty sure I talked about this in quite some detail.
Another question that this brings up, because I, you know, I noticed that it is, it's also something people take for Alzheimer's?
Yes, exactly. In prescription strength form, correct.
Oh, prescription strength form. Because it runs in my family, I'm afraid to say. And as I'm listening to some of your teachings and stuff, I often think of, well, is this egolessness, what's the difference between that and what happens when somebody forgets? You know, about like it, just what happens when somebody loses memory.
You have to say more. I'm not quite sure where you're going.
So, in terms of Alzheimer's and the aging brain, and you know, losing words and such. You know, I'm just trying to.
So, are you asking what is the relationship of that to egolessness? Is that what you're asking?
Yes.
Well. Yeah, that's a pathological type of egolessness. So this is where things like pre-trans fallacy come into play. Because the type of ego, we have to centrifuge these things out, because if we're talking about egolessness in a spiritual sense, that's a transcend but include phenomena. Alzheimer's is more an exclusion phenomena. So it's not spiritual in that regard. You become egoless, selfless, not in a developmentally progressive way, but in a developmentally arrested way. So there are qualities. Yes, there's, you know, kind of less selfhood because there's less referentiality and hence less memory. But that's not, that can be pathological. Real growth, what did Jack Engler say? You know, you have to be someone before you can be no one. You have to have a healthy ego before you can transcend it. And so this is a pre-trans fallacy where it's not the same thing. Some of the same qualities can seem to be there. It's like the same qualities you see in a child. They can appear very kind of elevated and awakened until what? You take the toy away from them, right? Then where's their compassion? Where's their wisdom, right? That's pre-personal. It's not transpersonal. So when you're talking about selflessness and the way you're talking about egolessness, that's a pre-egoic function, not a trans-egoic function. Okay. And that's important because they're not the same. They're definitely not the same.
Really helpful. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Okay, everybody. Oh, all kinds of, Alyssa, I'm going to ask you to leave this open for a little bit so people can scan through some of the links and stuff. There's all kinds of really cool things being posted here. But for now, yeah, I'm going to check out. Nice to see everybody. Dedicate whatever value we have done here. Send it out. This is not just for ourselves. Send it to all sentient beings who are suffering everywhere, animals, humans and the like, and others. We don't want to keep all our little goodies to ourselves. But until next time, sleep and dream healthy. And those of you who know what we do, I'll see you at other venues and formats. And 2 weeks, I think I'm back. I'm not sure. I might be in Aspen that weekend. But anyway, you'll see me around somewhere. You know where I am. You can track me down in the hood. I'll be there, right? So hi, bye to all my friends and enemies. So nice to see everybody. Really. This is so fun. I really do enjoy it. Bye, everybody. Till next time.